The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
We are NFL Live. Marcus Spears is ready to go, and he's here in studio with us.
Oh, I felt like I needed to do a wrestling hand.
Marcus in studio.
Yeah, I like that you were trying to do what Marcus was doing, and it didn't look very good. Anyway, these guys are here. We've also got Mina Kimes and Adam Schefter with us on NFL Live as usual, and there's so much to talk about. Guys, we realize this is a historic matchup at the quarterback position, but give us something else, Dan, you're paying close attention to on Monday Night Football tonight.
I want to see the matchup between Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Patrick Queen, the linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens, really in the pass game. We heard all offseason that this addition to Edwards-Helaire was going to be huge for their pass game, and I want to see it show out tonight. I expect them to flex him out as a wide receiver a ton for Kansas City and make Queen go one-on-one in the pass game.
Wink Martindale, what are you going to do? You're my guy. I know you. Played for you. Are you going to stay aggressive or play vanilla in certain situations? Mahomes has struggled at times against a four-man rush with everybody's eyes pointing back down at him. What are you going to do, Wink? Figuring you're going to throw some pressure at him.
I want to see who covers Travis Kelce, because a name you might not hear that often, Tavon Young, the Ravens' nickel corner, knocked out for the season with a knee injury. It's going to cause some reshuffling in that secondary with Marlon Humphrey moving inside. Might fall to Jimmy Smith to cover Travis Kelce. You know Andy Reid is looking at that matchup, and he's going to try to exploit it.
Well, who knew that since last season, Lamar Jackson is actually second in the NFL in touchdown passes from the pocket with 32, trailing only Russell Wilson. It's not just Lamar Jackson's legs that beats teams. It's his arm as well. He's turned into a first-rate quarterback across the board.
Let's talk about the other first-rate quarterback in this game, and that would be Patrick Mahomes. His first two seasons as a full-time starter in Kansas City, the offense registered a league-leading 6.5 yards per play. That's the most across a two-season span since the St. Louis Rams back in 2001, also known as the greatest show on turf. But this season, the Chiefs appear to be returning to the pack so far. They rank just 15th across the NFL in yards per play. More on that in a moment. But Marcus, why is the first quarter in this game so crucial tonight?
Because you can be down 21-0 with the blink of an eye. You're playing against Lamar Jackson. Let's not forget what he can do offensively and what the Baltimore Ravens can do. And we've seen the Chiefs start slow, and we've been concerned about it. We've talked about it in our meetings. I have no clue. I actually went to the point of thinking, are they trying to experiment? Are they trying to figure out some new things that they can do? And then going back and looking at the Chargers game, the Chargers gave them problems, but they kept everything top down. You cannot start slow against the Baltimore Ravens. They are going to make plays offensively against any team in the NFL. You may find yourself down three touchdowns if you don't start fast.
Yeah, Dan, we just told you the Chiefs ranked just 15th in the NFL in yards per play. The offense really hasn't looked settled. What are some specifics that you're seeing there, why that's happening, how they can fix it tonight?
Yeah, two things is Patrick Mahomes hasn't been great in the pocket. You know, there's been a ton of drifting in the pocket. A lot of times it's you got to trust your pocket more, climb up in it a little bit more. The tackles have played well, certainly struggled a little bit against the Chargers, but I want to see Mahomes kind of settle into that guy in the pocket that used to live there, that used to just own that space and not worry what was around him. And so, listen, it's only a second game, but I want to see that growth. And then, listen, Andy Reid is the best screen designer and then situational screen caller there is in football. And their screen game just has not been good this year. They're only averaging about five yards per screen pass. And it's not just to the tailbacks. He gets them designed for Travis Kelce. He gets them on the perimeter for those receivers. If they can get back to those roots of being dominant in the pocket with Patrick Mahomes and really dialing up those screens at the right time tonight, it's going to be huge for their offense to look what it's like what it's used to for years past.
Dan, you're so right about the screens. When I went back and watched the Chargers game and Mahomes' struggles, a couple things jumped out to me. One, they were getting pressure with four. You saw the drifting that you described. Typically, however, Andy Reid's counter to that, as you described, is that he has this explosive screen game. The Chargers linebackers and defensive backs played super disciplined football, kept everything in front of them, were able to limit that. Now they face Baltimore, a defense that so far this season has allowed one screen pass for -2 yards. I repeat, -2 yards. They are allowing the fewest yards after catch receivers of any defense in the NFL this season. So this is going to be a challenge for Andy to get that going. I alluded to Tavon Young being out earlier. I wouldn't be surprised if they challenge him downfield. But they're going to have to get something going in the short game as well, and it's going to be difficult.
That's wild. One screen pass for -2 yards. Now you get to feel Mina Kimes.
I like the type of defense I play on.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right, Marcus. You used to. All right, so here's the thing, Shefty. Sammy Watkins, there is some news around him tonight. What can you tell us?
Well, he's been questionable with a concussion, but he went through a full practice this week, and the signs are that he's going to be available, despite the fact that he is listed as questionable. Andy Reid said he felt good as the week went on, and it doesn't seem like he's going to be limited tonight at all, Laura.
Okay, very quickly, Dan, you were just saying that's big, as Shefty was saying it. Why?
Yeah, that's big because Marlon Humphrey is a big physical corner, and he's the big physical receiver that can play that tough physical battle at the wide receiver. So if Sammy was out, I was going to be really concerned, but now Sammy can go play. Marlon's probably going to match up with him. The physicality will match up well, and usually Sammy gets the best of Marlon.
Listen, there is no doubt you need all of your horses.
Right.
Listen, that is
can cover.
And your response was absolutely right. Look, bottom line is this game is going to become about players. We can talk about play calling. The coaches are going to coach well. This is about playmakers making plays. That's why this game is so hype on Monday night. Mm-hmm.
Also, two of the NFL's longest active winning streaks on the line tonight. The Ravens with 8 straight, the Chiefs with 14 straight. Mina, coming into the season, no one talking about the Packers' offense actually being good. We all thought, oh, wow, they should have drafted some weapons for Rodgers.
Hold up.
All right, listen, Marcus, you were talking about Aaron Rodgers, though. You weren't talking about who was around him. And that's what we were all saying. They drafted Jordan Love. They should have got some weapons in. So, Mina, what are you seeing from this Packers' offense right now?
Well, I will say, if you watched NFL Live on Friday, you would have heard about Alan Lazard, you know, but...
Yes, man. Yes!
Get it, girl.
He's incredible. He's great. Rodgers trusts him. Look, the Packers' offense has been awesome. Last night, I thought, was such a contrast. Even though, points-wise, it didn't end up being that different, it felt like the Saints had to fight for every yard. Whereas on the other side of the football, with Matt LaFleur, you saw that Kyle Shanahan influence, the integration of the run and the pass. Some of those highlights earlier, actually most of them, frankly, were off of play action. Rodgers had 52% of his attempts off of play action last night, which is the most of the last 5 years for him. And every time they did that, not every time, but half the time, shot play, shot play, shot play. There's a reason why guys were running around wide open downfield. It was a masterful game plan. It's what they've been doing all season, and it's why they weren't dependent on Davante Adams the way New Orleans is, frankly, dependent on Michael Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, I love the fact that you brought up Kyle Shanahan, because you guys have heard me talk about this, that Rodgers wanted an offense that looked fun like that. And last night was the exact reason why Matt LaFleur was brought to the Green Bay Packers. The distribution of the football, the confidence with Rodgers, how they're getting in sync. They're starting to see things together. Oh, quick ball out of your hands. I just want you to throw this quick bubble. Great. And then this touchdown pass, Lazard. If I had to show you one play, it would be this one. Listen to me. Quarterbacks do not throw this ball unless they're feeling themselves, unless they're feeling the play caller, unless they're feeling the person they're throwing the football to. Rodgers is lighting it up right now because Matt LaFleur was brought in to take shots. They come out in the second half. This is 3rd and 10. Deep ball to Lazard on 3rd and 10 to start the second half. That was after first down shot. The reality is this. Aaron Rodgers' greatest weapon, as great as he is his confidence. Matt LaFleur was brought in to reinstill his confidence. Last night, we kind of saw the exclamation point is that. He has given Rodgers his greatest weapon back. He has given him the reinstillment, or the reinstilling the confidence in himself. on the football field. And that's why this offense is here to stay, and we're going to talk about it every week.
Yeah, as much as Aaron Rodgers may be feeling himself, Drew Brees, not so much on the other side of things. And Marcus, the Saints were the favorite to win the NFC at the start of the year. They're now 1-2. How concerned are you about New Orleans?
I'm concerned, and they damn sure wasn't my favorite at the beginning of the season. Listen, this defense was supposed to be built to support Drew Brees. This defense has been the Achilles heel. We watched Derek Carr last week torch him, and now we watch Aaron Rodgers torch him. And look, the Saints, everybody, like, let's not have a conversation about the Saints are going to be good and the Saints are going to go to the playoffs. They built this team to win a Super Bowl. We are not operating in them being a good football team and just making the playoffs. The bottom line is this: they are not the best team in their division. Even though they beat the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, watch when this next game happens and see what happens. You're looking at a Tampa defense, an offense that's coming along. You just saw what Aaron Rodgers did. We see what Russell Wilson is doing. This is the NFC. The Saints ain't there. And what they built to and tried to get to, they are not a good enough team to get it done.
Wow. Mina, you liked their defense at the beginning of this year. How are you feeling now as we've gotten through week three?
They have let me down. I thought they were a lot better than this. But I'm going to say this, Laura. I wasn't impressed by the Packers' defense earlier. I mean, did y'all see what Alvin Kamara did? I think every single player on that Packers' defense missed on that run. Tackling issues across the board. And this is something we're going to talk about the Seahawks and Cowboys later, but this is something we're seeing across the NFC. Frankly, Marcus is right. The Bucs do look like the better team because they look like one of the few balanced teams in football right now.
It is interesting how defenses across the board seemingly not keeping up with offenses yet. That could be on display again tonight, depending on what these two guys and these two offenses do in Monday Night Football.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the upcoming draft, the playoff intensity, and finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back on NFL Live with Adam Schefter. Week 3 injury updates. Schefty, what's going on with Bucs wide receiver Chris Godwin?
Laura, he left the third quarter of yesterday's game in Denver with a hamstring injury. He had an MRI today. And you have to figure that a wide receiver who undergoes an MRI is bound to miss some degree of time. The question is how much, and it will depend on the MRI that comes back. The Buccaneers host the Chargers on Sunday. They very well could be without Godwin. It looks like the Seahawks could be without Chris Carson, who went down late in the game on this controversial hit from the Dallas Cowboys' Tristan Hill that led to the injury. It is a sprained knee, grade 1, typically a 1 to 2 week recovery timeline. But the Seahawks want to see how Carson fares this week, and Pete Carroll is not happy about the hit that Tristan Hill put on Carson to knock him out of the game. As for Tariq Cohen, he did suffer a torn ACL returning a punt on this play during Sunday's win against the Atlanta Falcons. He went down, stayed down, was quickly ruled out, and the Bears said after the game that it was a torn ACL. Keep in mind that the Bears just recently signed Cohen to a 3-year contract extension. Good that they got that deal done. And the Bears affirmed today that Nick Foles will remain as the starting quarterback. He will replace Mitch Trubisky, and he will start Sunday against the Indianapolis Colts and be the Bears quarterback moving forward, Laura.
We will actually get into that Bears conversation momentarily. Schefty, of course, on Monday NFL Countdown, that at 6 p.m. right here on ESPN. One thing, Marcus, that I wanted to hit you on quickly, the Chris Carson injury and how that happened with Hill tackling him that way. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, look, there's a code that exists in the NFL, if people believe it or not. And this is what you call a code breaker. You're not – look, we come up after the end of a game, after a hard-fought, hard-hitting game, and we could play all macho and talk about we trying to knock people out. There is a level of respect that pros have for pros. I've been a part of that league for 9 years, and after every game, you shake hands, you pray together, and you hope that everybody walked away unscathed. You don't intentionally try to hurt anybody. The alligator roll is one of the things that is talked about in the league that should never happen. And that's exactly what happened. Look, I want to ease up on the young player because he's young. But if you've been playing football since peewee, you know that you're not supposed to do that to another player.
Yeah, you and many others have been disgusted about that ever since it happened. Let's talk more about that game, the Seahawks and Cowboys going down to the wire on Sunday. And just over 2 minutes left, Seattle is down by one. It's 4th and 3. Russell Wilson, well, of course you trust him in this moment, Dan Orlovsky.
It's also one of the reasons why you bring a guy like Greg Olsen over, because he just sees it the same way as the quarterback. Sits down in that zone, Russell puts it right on him, a huge conversion. Look, this third down, like, this is so well done by Russell, understanding what the defense is. He hangs in the pocket and throws DK to space where only he can go get it. Beautiful composure by Russell Wilson at the end of the fourth quarter.
That was huge, too, because an underrated storyline in that game, DK Metcalf, the young receiver, showboated and lost a touchdown. And Russell Wilson said, you know what, I'm going to go right back to you to win this game. Big to see there with their chemistry. We're going to talk more about the Seahawks, but Mina, let's talk about the Cowboys. We know they lost the game. Still, you have some reason to be hopeful if you're a Cowboys fan today. Explain why.
Yeah, the reason is they play in the NFC East. If 2020 was a division, it would be the NFC East. My friend George at PFF pointed this out last night. The NFC East has a combined point differential of negative 97. The NFC West is plus 100, okay? So Dallas, you get to play in the JV division. Congratulations, you're probably going to win it, even though your defense stinks. The offense is very explosive. They almost won the game. And I will say about the Cowboys defense, yes, Russell Wilson destroyed you. Yes, your secondary is allowing the highest passer rating to opposing quarterbacks in the NFL. But Russell Wilson destroyed the Patriots last week. They've had a tough slate of early opponents. They still have time to bounce back.
Yeah, this defense, Marcus, clearly has issues. But are those issues fixable for the Cowboys?
No, I don't think they have the talent. And I hate to say it, look, Alden Smith been out the game for 4 or 5 years, and he's the best defensive player for the Dallas Cowboys. That is not good. All of these other guys have been playing. You lose Leighton Vander Esch, who was a promising rookie, had a promising rookie campaign, along with him and Jalen Smith. But when you look at this team, they are not only giving up the passing game, they are getting ran on. There is no interior pressure. We showed a Russell Wilson touchdown to DK Metcalf. I played with a guy named DeMarcus Ware where that would never happen. Ugh. You would never have that amount of time to throw a football. I wasn't the greatest pass rusher, but I know damn well the guys that were paid to do it when I played with them was going to get to Russell Wilson and close out a game. Look, we can talk about Dak and this offense because it's enticing and everybody wants to hear about it. If it had not been for Dak or this offense, they'd be 0-3. If it had not been for them, they wouldn't have even been in these games. The defense is bad. It is terrible. And we can try to slice it, dice it, and say they're going to get better, they're going to do this. We can compare them to Seattle's defense. The bottom line is this. Seattle is 3-0, and Dallas should be 0-3. So
yeah, I think the best way to phrase it is the Cowboys have an NFC championship caliber offense and a bottom of the division caliber defense.
There you go.
That's just the reality of it. Mm-hmm. And how it's going to play out is this, because I've been in this situation as the backup quarterback talking to a starter who feels pressure to go score 35 every single week. You got to go score 35 every week for us to have a chance to win. You got to be perfect, because here's the reality. Dak was really, really good yesterday. He made 2 mistakes. Dak Prescott made 2 mistakes on the road and lost. And the truth is, they should have been down 37-15. They should have been getting door stomped, but he hangs onto the ball for just a second too long, and that creates a sack pump fumble. What happens to that? Well, I've got a bad defense. That becomes a touchdown. I hold on to the ball for a second too long before the half. It becomes an interception. What happens to that? It becomes a touchdown. Those are 2 bad plays. Imagine that. Your quarterback has 2 bad plays, and you guys should have been down 37-15. So that's not sustainable. And the reality is this defense is going to hold back this football team.
But we don't know if he should have a contract.
Yeah, right? Hey, quickly on Dak, you made a very strong statement earlier to us today about him. What is it?
I forgot what I said.
You said he was a top five quarterback in the league right now.
He was really convicted about it.
Is he not, though?
He is.
Like, that's, I think we isn't agree. That scary, though? That's scary.
Right.
His past two weeks he's ever had.
Here's the thing. I've been talking a lot about Dak, so I forgot.
Yeah.
But the bottom line is, yes, he is.
Right.
Like, we talking about a guy right now in this league that, to Dan's point, he has to be perfect for his team to win. He's damn near been perfect. Hmm. I mean, you look at the turnovers, and obviously, but quarterbacks deal with those issues. Dak came back in that Atlanta game, scored 3 touchdowns with his legs. In this Seattle game, like you said, should have been door stomped.
Right.
And because Dak is their quarterback, right, they weren't. It had nothing to do with anything else. Because he was their quarterback, they had a chance to win that game and actually gave him a lead to win it.
Yeah, the good thing is we're here to remind you whatever you thought about anything, Marcus, so don't worry about that. And we're also going to remind you that the Cowboys' schedule is incredibly favorable. In fact, ESPN's Football Power Index says that the Cowboys have the easiest remaining strength of schedule. You can see how that all plays out there. So, my goodness, if they don't win all those games, I mean,
Eagles, Washington,
they better. They better get going. All right. Also, Russell Wilson is really good. I promise we'll talk about that soon. Let's get back to our main event tonight. The Week 3 finale puts two of the game's biggest stars head-to-head on Monday Night Football. The reigning Super Bowl MVP Patrick Mahomes takes on the reigning league MVP Lamar Jackson in a battle of undefeated teams. 8 Eastern and 5 Pacific on ESPN. ESPN Deportes and the ESPN app. Our coverage begins with Monday Night Countdown. Now, for more, let's bring in Lisa Salters, who will be a part of tonight's broadcast. Lisa, what's on the mind of the two quarterbacks headed into this highly anticipated matchup?
Lamar Jackson has only lost 3 regular season games in his short NFL career, Laura, but 2 of those losses have come against Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. Jackson has said that tonight's matchup is just another NFL game, but his head coach acknowledged that his team may have created, quote, a good little chip on its shoulder after last season's early playoff exit. John Harbaugh told us, we have a lot to prove, for sure. So let's see what we can prove this week. As for the Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes said this game will be a big test for him to see how much he's grown mentally, something he said he really worked on this offseason, trying to better read defenses. Obviously, the Ravens, he said, have a lot of different blitzes, so being able to recognize that quickly and make smart decisions will be Mahomes' number one priority tonight. Laura?
We'll see Lisa on the sideline with Steve Levy, Brian Griese, and Louis Riddick in the booth for Monday Night Football. Just about 3 hours and 25 minutes until kickoff of the Chiefs at the Ravens. Live look there at Baltimore. Cam Newton and the Patriots beat the Raiders Sunday, but Cam wasn't happy with his performance. He graded himself a C, set his 162 yards and a touchdown plus an interception. Only 27 yards on the ground was subpar. You know what isn't subpar, though? Cam's nickname-giving skills. Here he is on Bill Belichick's nickname.
Do you have a nickname for Bill?
Dollar Dollar Bill, y'all. I'm not about to sit up here and be walking down the hall and see Coach Bill Belichick and be like, Dollar Dollar Bill, y'all, what's good, my guy?
Nah.
It's not like that. It's more or less, hey, Coach, how you doing? You doing okay today? Okay, cool. Great talk.
I just really want to see Bill Belichick's face when he's called Dollar Dollar Bill. Time for some quick reads. Mina, unlike Cam, you were impressed by the Patriots offense.
Yes, though I think he was right in his self-assessment. But here's the thing, Laura. It didn't matter. Because this Patriots offense has shown they can beat you a million different ways. This week, the flavor of Sunday was Rex Burkhead for them, who led the team in targets, catches, touchdowns. He was phenomenal against this Raiders defense that was gassed by the end of the game. And that's what I really like about this attack. It's so diverse, which is, of course, a calling card of that Patriots coaching staff.
Elsewhere in the Pats division, the Bills and the Rams had a crazy ending to that game.
Hey, look, don't tell me. I don't give a damn what led up to this call. I don't care what happened. It's a terrible call. And it cost the game for the Rams. There is no way for this DB to tell if this receiver is coming off to block or if he's in a route. Great heads-up play by Josh Allen by bringing attention to it, by throwing the ball in that direction. It was a terrible call, and it cost the Rams a win.
Nick Foles, officially the quarterback in Chicago now, Dan. Matt Nagy announcing that earlier. What do you think?
Yeah, it's the right decision. The way that he came in yesterday and just got really aggressive with the football, a bunch of huge conversions, and obviously leads them to that comeback win. This throw against zero pressure all out to win the game for them was a huge play. He was ready. He was rocking a tinted visor. He got the ball to Allen Robinson, and hopefully he continues to get this offense to play better for this defense in Chicago.
And then there's this. The Eagles were set to attempt a 59-yard Jake Elliott field goal with seconds left in overtime against the Bengals. Then a false start penalty happens, backed him up 5 yards. Rather than try a 64-yarder, which would have given Cincy good position for the win themselves if they missed it, Philly punts. Doug Peterson wishes they wouldn't have. Here's what he said about this decision to end up in a tie.
But looking back on it, I would have probably gone the other way and taken a chance to, maybe a shot down the field and put the ball up in the air. You know, it's a tough thing. I mean, again, looking back, you probably put it in your quarterback's hands to win the game.
Yeah, indefensible decision there, which is probably why Doug Peterson today says, yeah, I probably wouldn't have done that. Dan, you are our resident Eagles person. So what are your thoughts on the decision to punt?
It was the wrong decision. It was riddled in fear. Here's my thing, Laura. I just don't know how they come back from this. I don't know how Doug Peterson stands there and tells Carson Wentz, I believe in you, or stands there and tells his defense, who has the highest paid defensive line in football, I believe that when we need to get a stop, you can get a stop. Or Carson Wentz, when I need you to be at your absolute best, I trust that you will be. Because you had the opportunity, Doug Peterson, to do that for your football team, and you didn't. And you decided to take the – I don't like your guys' body language right now.
I'm going to stay out of this.
I just can't. I don't understand. I don't understand how they have that conversation. I don't know what the answer is for Doug Peterson to his starting quarterback and his defense.
I know the answer. Have you seen how you've played? That's the answer. Listen, Dan, I don't care how much you tell me. Doug Peterson factored in the fact that Carson Wentz is his quarterback right now and didn't go for 4th-and-12, bro. Like, he should have. I'm not saying that it was the right decision. But the decision was made, and I don't want to get into the psychology of it, but something subconsciously told Doug Peterson, this guy is not going to convert this. He is not going to make this play. And that could be from week one to the second half to the week against up until this game. That's the bottom line. Listen, when I came to this studio, I wanted to rip.
Yeah, why are you going so easy on him?
About
why are you going so easy on Dan? Man.
But it is already enough. It's enough. We see it now.
I
said something last week. I said Carson Wentz reminds me of Jameis Winston. And you and I had the conversation.
Right.
And it had nothing to do. Carson Wentz has had a tremendous amount of success. Nothing to do with Carson Wentz being a better quarterback than Jameis Winston. He is. But his lows are horrible.
And his highs aren't high enough anyway.
And that's what I remember saying about Jameis. You look at some things and you're like, oh, my God, that's top five talent.
Right.
And then you look at these type of situations and it's like, come on, man. Come on, man. You can't save yourself. Go ahead, Mina.
Mina.
No, I'm going to say this. Carson Wentz has been playing worse than Jameis played last season, certainly. And I, like Marcus, I take no pleasure in this. Not just because I like it when quarterbacks play well, it's exciting, but it's more fun for us to argue with Dan when Dan has something to lean on. Look at our man. He's beaten down.
I'm
look
beat
at
up,
that
guys.
Face.
I'm
Dan,
bad
Dan. Puppy coming into the
Well, you wore a damn right. green suit.
You wore
my
a green suit.
My wife was like, hey, you're going to save this for when the Eagles win. And then finally she was like, don't know when it's going to happen, so you're wearing it anyway.
But Marcus, doesn't that mean that, I mean, this is a revered suit in the Orlovsky household. He was saving it for when the Eagles would win.
I knew you were coming to studio. That's why I wore it.
Yeah, okay.
No, I do, because I think this is a very real thing. Like, if I'm Doug Peterson, I've got to figure out, it's beyond playing good right now. Mm. I've got to figure out how to get my quarterback back to thinking that he can play well and that I think he can play well. Like, that's a big deal.
Put the camera on me.
Uh-oh, he's over here.
Save me. I'm drowning.
That's Dan
Somebody
right now.
Throw in his green me a life
guys,
vest.
Guys,
they played as the ship went down.
Island. It's a tiny violin.
Go back to Virginia.
No, it's a tiny
violin. To help my guy.
Okay.
He is drowning right
back
now.
To
I like Marcus's technique as a violinist. There's a lot going on there.
On.
It's like a banjo violinist. They're telling me we have to go to break, but this is so much fun. All right, anyway, could tonight be the game of the year in the NFL on Monday night?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Video game-like play on the field tonight, and the Ravens boast one of the NFL's greatest rushing attacks of all time. They're finding success on the ground in a unique way, too. 99% of their rushing yards since the start of last season have come out of the shotgun or pistol formation. That certainly gives Lamar Jackson some space to get up to speed as he averages nearly 14 miles per hour when crossing the line of scrimmage, second only behind Kyler Murray in that span. So Dan and Marcus, how are the Ravens going to try and create space in their game plan tonight?
Yeah, Laura, you mentioned it. I would say that the Ravens are one of the, if not the best offenses in the NFL with creating space. And so it's going to be a huge key in this game of how the Chiefs defend that space. Let's watch the Ravens offense operate against Houston. All right, you see up top that the Ravens have put really a number of their offensive players into the short side of the field. I want to point out to everybody that this ball is on the right hash. When you do that, defenses have to match their numbers to your numbers. So you put your passing strength into the boundary, and the defense is going to match it. But this is about creating space. And so what the Ravens will do is then they'll be right before the snap. They'll take another one of those members that was to the field and, again, put him to the boundary. So they've got one, two, three, four really of their offensive weapons into the boundary. They have put the majority of their offense into that short side of the field. And they've really left what? One linebacker. They've left one guy that's somewhat close to the football from that right hash all the way to the field left there. Look at all that short side of that field that's congested with everybody on the offense. And now they want to go attack that space. I showed you all the people up top. There's this one defender left. That one guy is left right there. And they're going to wrap this screen backside. Now imagine this if you're a defender. You now have almost 35 yards left to cover. You're the only person that is left out there. And they've got two people, Baltimore offensively. Marcus, for them to defend this space defensively, what is the number one key for that defender meeting those blockers?
Yeah, it's beautiful because you've already been pre-leveraged. And football is just a numbers game. The only thing this guy can do is try to slice the outside leg of this pulling guard and either try to make the tackle or turn it into everybody that's pursuing from the inside.
Force that ball carrier and go inside. But he doesn't. He doesn't defend the space well, and he doesn't tackle well, and it turns into a huge gain. That's a poor example of how you want to defend him. Let's look at a good one by Houston. Again, you see up top, ball's going to be on the left hash. Look at all those people up into the short side of the field. The defense has to match. Marcus said it before. It's a numbers game. Remember, the Ravens want to set you up to attack that space. They'll bring somebody from that side that's right before the snap to be a blocker. They can wrap that backside fullback, and he can lead, and now they can go attack that space that they created. This is a great job by the Houston Texans defense. And look at this point. At that moment, Marcus, talk to me about these two defenders and the job they're doing defending that space.
Yeah. D.O., you know it as a vice. I know it as a funnel, anyone you want to call it. But this is outside leverage by this corner down low. It's inside but to outside leverage by that linebacker. And now you can almost force the running back into this particular mesh right here in order to fall off and try to make a tackle.
So they do a great job of defending that space, and then they got to tackle well. Beat a blocker, tackle well in space. Listen, it's not going to be perfect, But the Chiefs are going to see 15 or 20 plays like this tonight. If they want to win the game, they've got to excel at it.
Yeah, Mina, what does the Ravens game plan need to look like tonight to get the win? You hear these guys talking about the plays in space. What are your thoughts?
Yes. I'm going to say something that I never say. Anyone who's listened to me knows how much I love passing on early downs. You've heard me talk about running back contracts, but here's the formula. Run the damn ball.
Yes! Okay.
I went back and watched the last time these teams played, and the Ravens came out passing in the first half. Look, this Chiefs defense cannot stop the run. They are allergic to tackling. Austin Ekeler trucked them. They're allowing the fourth most yards after contact of any team per carry in the NFL. The Ravens don't have to get cute. Look, if they sell out against the pass, by all means, pass and do what Dan just showed you. But don't come out throwing when you don't have to against a defense that cannot stop the run.
What do you think, Dan?
I don't even know who you are anymore.
I know. Mina, are you okay?
Yeah, I know. Here's the thing. They can only do that if they stay in control of the football game. So it's got to be a completely complementary game. Like, they can't do that if they get down 10-0 because they won't be able to go haymaker for haymaker. But if they stay score for score, that's the exact method that they need to go play in.
All right, we do have a tweet that's come in that said Dan Orlovsky's dressed like the Riddler today. Just want to point out that this person said it was a positive thing. Wow. So the supervillain in Gotham City, we've got him on our set right here. It wasn't Mina who tweeted it. Let's get some game picks for tonight. What a game that we get to pick here. And Dan, we're starting with you. Who are you picking? What's the score? And why are you picking them?
I'm going to say the Kansas City Chiefs. They're the champs till someone knocks them off. I'll say 31-30. And I think the screen game is going to explode for the Chiefs tonight. Andy Reid, I mentioned it, is the best designer and the best caller when they're needed the most. And I think I like a lot of the matchups. The screen game becomes a huge impact tonight. Chiefs win.
I would love to follow the formula of my sister Mina Kimes and think that the Ravens are going to come out here and run their rock, which they will. But this thing is going to turn into a track meet. And I have the Baltimore Ravens 38-34 thinking about the Chiefs and how they struggle to start fast in games.
Oh, man, I hope it is that high scoring. Watch it be like 13-10. I got the Ravens. I think they're the more balanced football team. I think the biggest mismatch is what I just described. The Ravens rushing attack and the Chiefs run defense. Give me Baltimore.
I'm going to say the Chiefs are winning this one 34-31. I think a lot of it centers around Clyde Edwards-Helaire and what he can do. He's so versatile in so many different parts of the game. He's obviously a threat on screens, but he can really run any type of route, and they've already shown that. So certainly the Ravens will be aware of it, but they've got so many different weapons to think about. Clyde Edwards-Helaire slips through the crack and ends up being crucial in this Chiefs win. All right, so we've had to take pity on Dan Orlovsky today, which meant that Marcus Spears was playing a violin, and we wanted to show it to you again because the technique is so good. Whatever's happening.
He
looks like a conductor. No,
no. Well, then it turned into a banjo. Now it's getting a little bit more guitarish. We're starting a band on NFL Live. Who's the lead singer, though?
Y'all do me so wrong on this show, man. It's just so wrong.
Okay, we can't wait for Monday Night Football. We also can't wait until tomorrow. We'll see you on NFL Live right here on ESPN. Have fun tonight.